Good morning. With KUAC Local News, I'm Robin. Jury rights advocate and Fairbanks City Mayor candidate Frank Turney has died. KTVF and Web Center 11 report that Turney's death was announced at the Fairbanks City Council meeting last night. He was 72. Turney ran for Fairbanks City Council several times and also for City Mayor three times. He was more concerned with bringing attention to issues than becoming a public administrator. He was a cannabis legalization advocate, but he was probably best known for his long-term advocacy for broadening juries' rights to veto instructions given to juries by judges. He was convicted of jury tampering in 1997 after he approached people wearing juror name tags, sometimes aggressively, in and out of the Fairbanks courthouse in 1994. He had regularly attended criminal trials and would give jurors advice about their right to nullify court rulings. Sometimes Turney would stand outside the courthouse and shout about jury rights. The court administrator wrote Turney a letter in 1994 asking him to stop. When he did not, he was charged and convicted of criminal trespass and jury tampering. He appealed, and as the case worked up to the Alaska Supreme Court, Turney was pleased with the publicity it brought to the issue. He used his experience to spotlight local justice processes as recently as this post-election interview in October.
My issues are worth looking at. Anything I bring up, Nadia has been denied access to trial by jury. That's one of the checks and balances. You cannot discriminate solely on race. It's happening here. We've had public defenders come and testify, different attorneys. It's a problem in this state.
Turney moved from Oregon to Fairbanks in 1982 and started a snow shoveling business downtown. He was a regular fixture at Fairbanks City Council meetings, giving comment on almost every agenda item at every meeting. A North Pole area incineration facility is leading development of thermal remediation of PFAS-contaminated soil. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the process was the subject of a public meeting last night in Moose Creek, where there's PFAS contamination from firefighting foams at neighboring Eielson Air Force Base.
The meeting was organized by the local advocacy group Citizens for Clean Air. Member Gene Olson told the small group who gathered at the Moose Creek Fire Station that bringing together local people with experts on PFAS soil incineration is aimed at fostering better understanding of the remediation technique.
I think everybody's trying to do the right thing. It's just we're not quite sure what the right thing is yet.
Moose Creek-based Organic Incineration Technology, or OIT, has been conducting PFAS soil test burns for the last few years and was permitted by the state earlier this year to begin commercially incinerating soils tainted with PFAS-containing firefighting foams. OIT environmental consultant Paul McGuire told meeting attendees that analysis shows the technique to be very effective.
The majority of the PFAS is being converted to hydrogen fluoride. The hydrogen fluoride is being removed at a rate of about 95% in the packed tower wet scrubber. And the PFAS emissions that we're seeing so far are at an incredibly low rate.
McGuire says he and OIT Vice President Mark Sanford are working with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and PFAS experts to develop a process which is being looked at as a model for remediation of PFAS soils. McGuire credits several factors for making the 30-year-old Interior Alaska Incineration Facility, originally designed for petroleum-tainted soil, the focus of the new technology, including proximity to major areas of PFAS firefighting foam tainted soils at neighboring Eielson Air Force Base.
So to have a facility that was co-located with a PFAS contaminated water plume, it's just circumstantial. So it just put us in that position. And then going through the testing, because it's burgeoning, it's all being developed as we speak. And the fact that Mark was willing to pony up for the tests and do the analysis, and then the EPA is incredibly enthusiastic about being able to have access to the facility so they can develop their tests and methods and whatnot, it just has taken on traction of its own.
OIT is currently running relatively small batches of PFAS-contaminated soils through its incinerator, but the company Sanford says the business is eyeing the potentially lucrative opportunity of processing large volumes of tainted soils at Eielson.
The mountains are still over at Eielson. They're talking about shipping them out at a cost of, you know, somewhere $100 million. We'll burn it for $60.
With as much as $60 million in revenue at stake, OIT is carefully guarding some of its incineration process information. PFAS expert Pam Miller with Alaska Community Action on Toxics says that leaves some environmental and public health questions unanswered.
Of the hundreds of public records that we got through a public records request, a lot of it is redacted. So it doesn't give us the ability to really properly, I think, evaluate, because there's a lot that's being held secret here.
Miller points to some unmonitored incineration byproducts like dioxins and emphasizes the importance of looking at other PFAS remediation options, as well as developing and transitioning to non-fluorine-based firefighting foams to haul additional soil and water contamination. In Moose Creek, I'm Dan Bross.
The U.S. Supreme Court potentially dealt a blow yesterday to the Alaska law that limits campaign contributions. While an appeals court had upheld the law, the Supreme Court vacated that ruling. The justices told the appeals judges to reconsider the case in light of an earlier case that could call the limits into question. Jim Crawford is one of the plaintiffs who filed the lawsuit.
It shows Alaskans that one person or two people who really care and study can take an issue as fundamental as free speech and take it up to the U.S. Supreme Court and win. It's great.
Alaska limits individual donations to $500 per year or $1,000 over 2 years. The Supreme Court noted that Alaska's limit over 2 years is more than $600 lower than the lowest amount the court had allowed in the past, adjusted for inflation. It also noted that Alaska's limit for statewide office is the lowest in the country. Jason Harrow is a lawyer with Equal Citizens, a national group that advocates for campaign finance reform. Harrow says the court could have gone further.
It didn't have any argument, it didn't have any thorough briefing, and it just kind of kicked it back down to the lower court to say, hey, maybe look at it this way rather than the way you looked at it.
The Supreme Court's order was unanimous, but Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in a separate statement that Alaska's contribution limit is different than the limits in Vermont that the court invalidated in 2006. Ginsburg also quoted from a district court ruling in favor of Alaska's limits. She noted that Alaska has the second smallest legislature in the country and receives much of its revenue from only one economic sector, the oil and gas industry. These characters make Alaska, quote, highly, if not uniquely, vulnerable to corruption in politics and government, unquote. And this may warrant Alaska's low limits. The Alaska Sea Grant wants to help people start seaweed farms. A new training program for people will be held in Kodiak, Ketchikan, and Sitka in February. Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation and partners, including Alaska Sea Grant at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, will take applications until December 20th. The training is part of the Alaska Mariculture Initiative and is intended to provide tools and knowledge to anyone planning to farm seaweed commercially in Alaska. Participants will be required to attend an online webinar and the in-person workshop in Kodiak, Ketchikan, or Sitka. While the training is free for those selected for the program, participants will be expected to attend and complete work products in order to continue. Space will be limited to 10 people per workshop. For KUAC Local News, I'm Robin.